Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to Dr. Russell Jaffe, who's an innovator in the field of laboratory testing and evaluation for patients who are looking for a more functional or integrative approach to their health. And Dr. Jaffe, we owe him in the field of natural medicine a great debt of gratitude because he's an innovator. He's developed and validated a whole set of tests that we've now come to rely upon. So in part one, we began talking about what are called high-sensitivity predictive biomarkers, which are some of the key tests that you need to assess health, that you need in your toolkit. We went through four of the eight most important, so let's proceed. Let's talk about number five.
Yes, indeed. Now, number five is vitamin D, and we now know the correct analyte, what to measure, and we even know what the goal value is. For those who are technically oriented, it's the 25-hydroxy-D or the 25-hydroxycholecalciferol. And the goal range is 50 to 80 nanograms per ml. And if you simply walk down the street today handing out vitamin D to be absorbed under the tongue so that it goes to the brain before the body and so that it gets in, because according to Mike Hollick, Dr. Sunshine, millions of Americans have enough digestive disorder that if they take vitamin D supplements, it doesn't get absorbed from their gut. So we wanted to get in, which means let it dissolve under the tongue before swallowing. We recommend 400 IU per drop, and we recommend as many drops as
needed. Let me cut you off there. You actually think that a lot of people just say, well, you can just swallow vitamin D, that's fine. You think that the sublingual route actually is more effective than taking the pills?
Well, we've shown it in many cases. So we have numerous anecdotes, and my colleague has even more, where people were taking, say, 4 to 10,000 IU of correct vitamin D, and depending upon intestinal uptake, they had 30 nanograms or less. Mm-hmm. When they took the same amount of vitamin D, but as a drop to dissolve under the tongue before swallowing, then they came into the 50 to 80 goal range.
Okay. Well, that's a useful pearl because yes, the drops are available, and for some people, they're a preferred option.
Yes. And it's very good of you to highlight when we get to something that is a clinical pearl, and that is because there's general understanding today that vitamin D is low, although there's confusion because the range that labs have reflects how deficient people are, and we do now know the goal range, the 50 to 80 nanogram goal range, and we even know the correct route if we want consistent uptake, and that is mucosal.
Okay. Number
now
six.
Number six. And this is Bill Harris's omega-3 index. And a quick little story. A scientific colleague of mine, Patty Doister, had Dr. Harris in to give a workshop. And Dr. Harris was saying, gee, it's hard to find people who really have healthy levels of omega-3, of EPA, DHA in their membranes. And Patty points to me, he takes out a lancet, a drop of blood goes onto a little filter paper, he takes it back to his lab, and I am happy to tell you I am their poster fellow.
All right.
Mine is over 16%. He recommends over 8%, although in this particular situation, more EPA and DHA, especially at the 2 position of the triglyceride, is really helpful.
And how did you personally achieve that? Slam the fish oil capsules or eat a lot of fish, or how does it?
No, I do eat fish, and I do eat deep water fish, but that is complicated because the fish swim in the ocean and the ocean's full of schmutz. To keep that one short, Yes, I do take EPA DHA, and I was taking 3 to 6 grams, which is what integrative colleagues would often recommend. But my blood pressure does better when I take 9 grams.
Wow.
And Henry Black at NYU is one of my cardiologists. Joanne Foody is another. I'm very fortunate to have some very fine cardiologists who are amazed at, on the one hand, how effective my regimen is because there's no pharmaceuticals in it at all. And on the other hand, how little they know about, say, omega-3s mm-hmm. versus prescriptions.
Wow. Okay.
So omega-3, EPA, DHA, I really feel that people should be taking not the precursor, but the active EPA and DHA. The reason for that is that
When you're referring to precursor, you mean like something like flax oil or something?
Yes, right? Like flax oil.
Right.
So the so-called desaturase system has to convert the precursor oils into the active and beneficial EPA and DHA. And those desaturase systems are very sensitive to magnesium deficiency, to toxic metal exposures. And so I do not assume in people who are less than quite healthy that it's easy for them to convert.
Okay. That's a good point.
And so if you're a healthy person, flax is a very good source of lignin as well as a source of good oils. Best if you take the flax seed and make them into a nut butter. So I recommend one-third sesame, one-third flax, mm-hmm. and one-third whatever other seed you want.
That way you get the whole flax. You get the whole flax along with the lignans as opposed to the oil, which may be just clear and doesn't have any dark material in it.
No, that's exactly right. And be careful of the clear oils because they are sensitive to oxidation. Mm-hmm. We want the fiber lignin. We want the fullness of the seed and its oil. But you have to crack the seed to get at the oil. You know, if you don't chew it and break the hull, those seeds could just pass right through.
Okay.
So I do recommend making nut butters as a very good dietary source. And I do recommend supplementing as needed with EPA and DHA, but only distilled under nitrogen because you want to protect the unsaturated fats from air oxidation and you want to remove toxic metals from mercury to lead, which is what happens when you distill under nitrogen. So I do suggest micellized EPA and DHA, and I do suggest that it be distilled under nitrogen.
Okay. Number seven.
So now the next, right. This is a measure of DNA or nuclear oxidative stress. It's 8-oxoguanine mm-hmm. or 8-hydroxoguanosine. In biochemistry, when you get the name, we change it to something else a little different depending on whether you're in different branches of medicine. But it's called 8-oxoguanine. It is a urine test. It's a measure of oxidative stress in the nucleus, and I feel an important one because I want to know whether my nucleus is oxidatively overstressed or not. And, of course, we will get to methylation. That's actually through the homocysteine that we had before. So I do need to know several different aspects of how happy the nucleus is, and the 8-oxoguanine provides that information.
Okay.
And the last test is pH, but this is a very specific thing done by people at home because after 6 hours of rest, our understanding is that the urine equilibrates with the cells, and so you get a non-invasive measure of cellular metabolic acidosis. When I say cellular metabolic acidosis, I mean the cell's too acid because it lacks magnesium and potassium. And it turns out that magnesium is hard to get in and tends to run out of the body quickly, so we recommend the enhanced uptake and chaperoned retention form of magnesium, which is combining ionized magnesium salts with choline citrate. No other form of choline works, but choline citrate does. And that's how to correct the underlying net acid excess that burdens many, many people.
So you're suggesting that people at rest, you know, perhaps on awakening, check their urine pH with, like, just pH paper, litmus paper?
Well, yes, exactly correct, that on wakening, the first urine that comes out, and during the 6 hours of rest, you can get up and go to the bathroom. That doesn't matter, but you can't go to the kitchen and eat. You know, you can't be active. You disturb all the rhythms. So after the rest period, the next urine that's expressed, you use a very special 5.5 to 8 high contrast pH paper.
So sensitive paper.
Sensitive pH paper. 5.5 to 8 range sensitive pH paper. And you record in a little log what the value is. The goal range is 6.5 to 7.5. Many people are below 6.5, sometimes substantially so. And since pH is a logarithmic measurement, If you're down one unit of pH, that's a factor of 10.
10, right, 10 times.
Right, mm-hmm. And if you're down 2 units of pH, which is often the case, that's a factor of 100.
Yeah, it's so like decibels or the Richter scale, you know, same thing.
Yes, very much so. Right, so these are so-called logarithmic scales. These are not linear scales, so little differences make a big impact on physiology.
Okay.
And the goal is 6.5 to 7.5. If you lack minerals and are too acid, you'll be below 6.5, and then you want to increase the alkaline-forming foods as well as reducing immune reactions that produce acids, and taking in forms of minerals like magnesium that the body can assimilate and utilize.
Okay, so now that we've established the 8 basic tests, surely there are many more tests that can go into an integrative workup. But let's focus on finding out if you have optimal nutrition. Nutrient testing, because conventional medicine, we sometimes check for B12 and folate. We will check for iron. Maybe if you're lucky, you'll get a ferritin or vitamin D. But there's a heck of a lot more ways to ascertain whether you have optimal nutrition, right?
No, all correct. But in regard to epigenetics, these 8 tests cover all of the 92% of lifetime health and risk in its entirety. Now, once we find, say, difficulty in methylation and detoxification because the homocysteine doesn't come down quickly the way we want it, then we might look at transsulfuration pathways. We might look at amino acids, keto acids, and organic acids in urine and or plasma. We might look in the saliva for stress hormones and or male and female hormones. Mm-hmm. And we might get deeply into that in an individual case, but guided by these 8 biomarkers.
Mm-hmm. So it's like an entry point. It's sort of like the entry point into a more comprehensive deep dive into physiology.
That's exactly right. This is the entry point. It's not the end of the journey. It is a sufficient entry point. In my view, this replaces what was the previous generation's standard. A generation ago, Galen and Gambino published Beyond Normality, and they introduced the concept of sensitivity, specificity, and predictive index. And what we're talking about is the next generation after that. So Galen and Gambino brought us into the statistical realm. We could make people into statistics. We could compare people to population ranges. But tests were generally plus or minus 20%, which is good enough for statistical work, but not good enough for functional integrative practice.
Can you briefly explain the difference between what is quantitative testing, in other words, measuring the amount of something in the bloodstream, versus functional testing? Because just because you have a certain amount of something in your blood and it's present, a lot of doctors will say, well, you have enough B12. But that may not be enough B12 for certain people with certain genetics under certain circumstances. So explain the functional aspect of that testing.
Yes. And here we could spend quite a long time
exploring
several of the aspects of what you've just alluded to. The essence of my view, and I think this is shared by Jimmy Watson, who was the father of the Human Genome Project, we have massive misunderstandings at the earliest days of understanding genetic, the so-called SNPs, the so-called variants. The fact that you have a variant doesn't mean you have a problem. There are hundreds of SNP hemoglobins, that is, there are hundreds of hemoglobins that are different than whatever is the hemoglobin A standard, but only a few of them have any clinical meaning. And it turns out that in genetics, one specific measurement is almost meaningless because there's lots of factors and forces, and you have to map what you correctly said as a deeper dive into the genome and the RNAs, because there are families of these small genetic materials that are even perhaps more important than the DNA. And just to try to summarize a complicated issue simply, genes change based on your habits and lifestyle, not the other way around.
And that's the concept behind epigenetics.
Epigenetics. They gave Barbara McClintock the Nobel Prize for showing that genes jump around. Mm-hmm. They change, they rearrange. based on whether we give them the detoxification support, the neurohormonal balance, the immune defense and repair capacity, the microbiome, because there are certain things that our digestive tract has to deliver to us because we can't make it ourselves, and the most cost-effective way is to get it from the bugs in our gut.
What about toxicity testing? If we look at breast milk, if we look at blood samples or urine samples from the average American, we can find all kinds of, hundreds of industrial chemicals that weren't present in the year 1900. So how can we ascertain whether these are at a threshold that's meaningful or potentially harmful, whether it's a sign that we need to detoxify?
Well, my view is we act from an excess of caution until all the data comes in. Mm-hmm. That's the cautionary principle. That is gaining some, quote, traction here. It is widely followed in Europe, where they have seen the devastation and consequences of being intoxicated and unable to detoxify. And I think both sides of that are very important. There's little doubt that we are marinating in a sea of novel chemicals, many of which our body must detoxify, otherwise we will be significantly impaired. Well, the detoxification occurs in the battery. It occurs in the mitochondrial energy center of the cell. It occurs in very strategic places in the cytoplasm. When we muck up that, when we overwhelm with bad stuff and don't correspondingly increase the good stuff, then we have set the stage for chronic, degenerative, maybe autoimmune, likely inflammatory illness. So we now know that inflammation is related to almost all illness. We now know that immune intolerance is the rule in illness, and restoring immune tolerance is mightily helpful in restoring detoxification capacity, restoring hopefulness and helpfulness, restoring restorative sleep, among other things. And we could get into why the biochemistry of that links such diverse functions to fundamental cellular competences or incompetences. So if we look specifically at detoxification, we start with homocysteine. We think about repair deficit, so that's hsCRP. We think about energy efficiency, that's hemoglobin A1c. And so any of those plus any evidence of loss of immune tolerance, any adverse reactions on LRA tests, would lead me as a functional physician to look at nutrition. What can people digest, assimilate, and eliminate without immune burden and without toxic overload? And then I might get into digestive testing, or I might get into neurohormonal salivary or plasma testing. I might get into urinary testing of amino acids, keto acids, and indicia of nutritional competence. It turns out that you made a very good point, many good points, but one of the good points you made is that measuring the level of the nutrient in the blood is like looking at the traffic on the street and trying to figure out what kind of cars are coming here and going there.
Mm-hmm. It's a good
really
analogy.
Not going to give you what you, it's really not going to give you what you need to know. And we do know, whether it be urine or other specimens, what metabolites reflect adequate B12 and folate and B-complex? What metabolites reflect adequate and comprehensive nutrition? So I come at it both ways. I leave it to the person whether they want to do more testing and go by results, or whether they want to have my clinical impressions and go by results. But I always leave them the judge of whether we're making enough progress and delivering for them a better outcome.
And briefly, because this is such an amorphous field, you know, I've attended all-day seminars with you on, the subjects of testing, even like subsets of the subject of testing, like immunity. How do we get a handle on our immune response? Do we have a normal or good immune system? I guess the LRA can give us some insight into that.
The LRA is an ex vivo test. It measures immune reactions comprehensively. It doesn't look at the immediate reactions, the hives, wheezes, itching, and anaphylactic shock reactions. But it does get you the hard to detect. Those reactions that occur 3 hours to 3 weeks after exposure, where a good history is really very hard to interpret. And in addition to the LRA by ELISA Act tests, We want to look at these predictive biomarkers against goal values and ranges, and then get into restoring immune tolerance, restoring neurohormonal balance, restoring a robust microbiome, which means 40 to 100 grams of unprocessed fiber a day, 40 to 100 billion healthy CFU or healthy alive bugs each day from fermented foods and supplements. It means recycled glutamine, because we don't want to have to take tens of grams of glutamine to repair the gut, but glutamine is an important energy source for the intestine, especially when it's under oxidative stress. And so we like recycled glutamine, say a gram and a half on rising, a gram and a half before exercise, and a gram and a half before bed, so that you never imbalance the amino acid pools, but you do get tenfold recycling of glutamine to build glutathione, to repair the gut, etc.
And just, and again, briefly, how can we get a fix on the microbiome? There are various types of tests that evaluate the composition of the stool, but we're still kind of, are we in sort of our infancy of our understanding of this complex system?
We're just in our infancy, and it's easy to misunderstand when, like Sherlock Holmes says, you don't have quite enough data. We can, as Joel DeRay does routinely, a colleague in France, measure the entire genetic characteristics of the bugs in the intestines. But it's not at all clear what this means.
Yeah.
It is clear that it changes quickly. So when we improve the quality of what we deliver to our digestive tract, within as short as a few days to a week, you get improvements in the microflora. And it turns out there are bugs that make you heavy and make it difficult to lose weight, and then there are bugs that keep you lean and help you shed extra fat and pounds. So there's lots of short-term benefits as well as lifelong benefits in approaching this. Now, for folks who want to get into the details, ACAM.org, an organization we both admire, has me doing an entire day on this very subject in November in Las Vegas. So folks are welcome to look at ACAM.org. They're welcome to contact us.
I'll be speaking there, too. Will you be out there in November?
Oh, yes. No, I'm two major talks on the main program as well as the full-day workshop on Thursday.
Oh, great.
Avi will be there. Buddy will be there. Right. Hopefully, we'll see each other there.
Let's have dinner.
Go to a show or something. Yeah, yeah. No, with pleasure. I'm actually taking the medical students who attend out to dinner, restarting something that we did many years ago.
Oh, great.
And they've asked to restart.
That's wonderful.
Let's do that together.
That sounds excellent. So, and okay, so our intelligent medicine call to action is, if for health professionals who want a really good grounding in the subject, take the course. That course is in November. Go to ACAM.org to find out about the fall conference of the American College for Advancement in Medicine. But where else can consumers and professionals learn more about high-sensitivity predictive biomarkers?
Well, there are two toll-free numbers that, if it's okay, I'd like to offer
please.
Your listeners. This is for information about better quality nutritional supplements and bioavailability. It's 1-800-525-7372. That's 1-800-525-7372. And the other, anywhere in North America, 1-800-553-5472. And that's about the LRA, one of the biomarker tests, and they can provide you additional information about biomarkers. And if you're online, you can go to Better Lab Tests now, Better Lab Tests, plural, now.com, betterlabtestnow.com. And that's a consumer access site, because often physicians want people to have certain tests, but their network or their employer does not employ these advanced functional tests. And so there is a website called betterlabtestnow.com for folks to learn about the predictive biomarkers and interpreting them to goal values.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And I just want to ask a side comment to our listeners. It may sound very complex, but I think, Dr. Jaffe, you'll agree that in some ways it all boils down to the fundamentals, healthy lifestyle, optimal diet, correct supplementation, optimal sleep and exercise, stress reduction, hormone balancing, and then we can get to goal. It's really not as complex as flying a malfunctioning 767. It really is just about doing the basic things, and a lot of these numerous parameters will come into line, correct?
All correct. We become the result of what we eat and drink, what we think and do. So let's choose a diet and a lifestyle that allows us to digest, assimilate, eliminate without immune burden, keep neurohormonal balance and resilience, and therefore a happy digestive microbiome and a happy metabolic metabolism.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's conclude this very informative edition of Intelligent Medicine. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Russell Jaffe. BetterLabTestsNow.com is a resource for those of you who want to learn more. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.